I'm Stephen Trump, my wife Ruth. We're delighted to be with you today. We're going to be addressing the subject briefly this morning in this sort of workshop session on leadership and submission, following on, putting into practice, hopefully, some of the things that William has spoken of earlier this morning. That I will speak for about 5 minutes or so. Ruth will speak for 8, 10 minutes, something like that, and then I will conclude with another 5 minutes, just to give you an outline. I think as we start marriage, we start with many dreams. We aspire, didn't you, that your marriage, our marriage, will be not only better, but the best. And I'd say to a young couple, go for it. Absolutely. But remember also that we start with many handicaps, not least that we're sinners. And remember that it isn't it's the circumstances. Don't create your sinfulness. The circumstances reveal your sinfulness. Don't blame your circumstances. They just reveal your sinfulness. And we're each one of us, in some measure, the products, but not the slaves of our background. And if your background, which it may well be, is grievous and broken, then there will be additional struggles. What is leadership? I imagine always in my mind a large family trekking across upland Wales, moorlands, rocky slopes. The leader leads. He or she is ahead, delegates. He knows where he's going. He keeps the goal, the time, the weather in view. He thinks ahead. He's aware of the dangers. He comforts the weaker members of the family. He encourages everybody. He urges them on. He cultivates an especially good relationship with his number two. So being a leader is being in some measure in front and working at it. The Christian picture of leadership is paradoxically, is it not, that of servanthood, like Christ, who leads by serving. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and give his life a ransom for many. So, at home, maybe the father, the husband, will say to his young sons, "Come on, boys, let's help Mummy with the washing up. I'll wash, you dry." So leadership is leading. A leader leads, and very often just by example. How do you lead biblically? First, I think it's relationally, and I'll certainly be picking up on some of the points mentioned by William and Richard and others. We lead by loving our wives as Christ loved the church. But what does that mean, gentlemen? Does that mean flowers, affection, sex? Yes. But men are good manipulators, aren't we? It means wanting her best. This has been spoken of already. Wanting her holiness and blamelessness and helping her to blossom and reach her potential. That's certainly been clear, hasn't it, this morning? And it means listening to her on her own terms. For example, she might say something, my wife might say something, and I might say to myself, oh, she is such a warrior. And disregard her fears and shut her off. No, I'm still listening, but I've actually shut her off. But love really listens. Yes, she might be a warrior. She might actually be objectively wrong. But love doesn't dismiss her fears. It seeks to help her through her fears by taking her fears seriously, even if deep down you're convinced that she's wrong. And you do it in such a way which is not patronizing, not dismissively, oh, the little lady is worrying again, not passively, not with resignation, but prayerfully, practically listening and seeking to help. So leadership is loving, serving, and notably listening. Leadership is living a spirit-filled, forgiven life alongside your wife. It is allowing, amazing, that sometimes as a husband you might be wrong in your ideas and your perceptions. It is humbly admitting your errors, that involve her and asking her forgiveness. Will you forgive me, Ruth? It is not resignation. It is not saying, well, tough. I'm just like that. My dad reacted like that, and he lost his cool, and so do I. That is not living a Christian life. It is Galatians 5, the fruit of the Spirit. Self-control, notably. And by the way, self-control is not retreat and sulkiness. A man who's showing self-control is not just saying nothing. Because anger can be open, that's easy to identify, but anger can be hidden. But whatever its form, it does its damage. It's not mouthing off, it's not insulting your wife or children, and there's no coarse joking. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but any such word is as good for edification, that it may give grace to those that hear. Ephesians 4:29 was our marriage verse we chose 35 years ago. It is saying, I will not live that way, a sinful way. It is saying with your wife, we will not live that way. It is saying to your children and living it with your children, we will not live that way. That is leadership. And so help us God to live the right way. So a leader decides on a direction, on a policy, in collaboration, of course, with his wife. What a fantastic challenge. I think Richard has already evoked this morning. I mean, I used to say to people about the speed limits, whether it's in Belgium where we live or England, any fool can exceed the speed limit. That comes naturally. Any fool can mouth off. Any fool can live for himself. That comes naturally. I do that very well. But to take the Bible seriously and to live a holy life, that takes grace and discipline, and especially at home. I don't know about you, but I want to be like that. And I think that's what we've always sought in our marriage and want to go on living that way. Over to you, Ruth.
Thanks. There's a phrase which has really helped me with the biblical concept of submission, and it is this. This is my first point of four. Husband and wife are equal in value but different in role. I think we've already alluded to this, but I'll say it one more time. Husband and wife are equal in value but different in role. So before God, our value is the same. We're equally made in his image. We're equally sinners for whom Christ died. We're equally inheritors of the kingdom of God. But within the marriage relationship, we have different roles because God designed it that way. So an egalitarian marriage is missing out on one major aspect of God's creation, God's design, that is the different roles he wants us to adopt. Some marriages are actually a competition between husband and wife. The wife can always be trying to outsmart her husband. She can make sure the world and her children know all about his faults. I'll briefly attempt a definition of submission. Submitting is following your husband's lead as a responsible adult. An equal partner who plays her full part in the marriage, gladly recognizing her husband's authority as the God-appointed leader in the family. Submission is not subjugating myself like a slave to a master, and it is not blind obedience like a little child who can't be expected to understand her parents' reasons. My second point. I'd like to look at what submission is in practice with two examples from our marriage. Submission for me has sometimes involved listening to a loving rebuke from my husband, considering it, seeing the justice in what he was saying, repenting, saying sorry to God and to my husband, and then seeking to change. One example would be when Stephen said to me, "Ruth, you're acting like a princess." Trouble was, I had to admit he was right. But he said it in such a good way, not tearing me down, but building me up. And I knew he said it because he loved me, so I could accept it. And that has been a great growth point in our marriage. It started before we were married, actually, this habit. But it's been a great growth point in our marriage, and hopefully it goes the other way too. Another example. Submission to your husband involves, I think, learning what is really important to him and respecting that. I have a husband who is very easily shamed. He got it from his dad. His dad was the same. Especially in public. So early in our marriage, we agreed never to criticize the other in public. If I disagree with something Stephen's just done or said, which can easily happen, I don't say so in public. Because I love him, I don't want to tear him down. But at home, in private, I'll make sure that I address the subject. And usually, he listens, we can come to a mutual understanding. So that's another growth point. So this is another example of submitting to the way Stephen likes to operate, but it's also actually an example of mutual submission, if you think about it, because I think that Stephen will often do the same for me. If I've made a mistake in public or said something bad in front of the children, he will back me up, which has been great as well. Point three, what helps a Christian husband to lead and a Christian wife to submit? All of us come into marriage with emotional baggage. Some of us come from homes where we learned the wrong roles. For example, it might have been the omnicompetent mother carrying all the responsibilities and leaving no space for dad to lead. Or it might have been the mother who retreated into her shell, becoming a doormat or a martyr. It might have been the absent father, or the father who's refused to take responsibility. It might have been the father who led by domination and not by servant-hearted love, who crushed and controlled his wife. It might have been a broken home where one parent has just had to do everything. It might have been a playboy father, an alcoholic mother, an abusive parent. Maybe you can relate to some of these. And if so, it's something God has allowed in your life, and it's not actually your fault. But if we've become Christian, we must be increasingly letting God challenge these assumptions that we take into our marriage through his word and changing our behavior at home. So the first Bible principle that will help us to lead and submit is refuse to live a lie at home. Stephen's touched on this. If both partners are growing in Christ-likeness, then leadership and submission will be getting easier as we gain good habits year by year. So this is what we want to see in our marriage. However far back we had to start, are we moving in a Christ-like direction? A second Bible principle that helps leadership and submission is faithfulness to your partner. I'm in the very fortunate position of being absolutely sure that my husband is committed exclusively to me. That is a wonderful freedom, a great privilege, and it makes me incredibly secure as a person. I'm helped to submit to his leadership because I know he is 100% for me, for building our family, our life, and our future. So that is a wonderful thing. He's looking out for me. He may not always get it right, but I can trust him. This is love that protects and provides without crushing, manipulating, or controlling, and it is wonderful. A third Bible principle that helps me submit is love. If I know Stephen loves me and is acting after listening to me and taking my opinion on board for the good of our family, then I rarely have any problem with submission. My last point, finally, when has submission been difficult for me? Most of the big decisions we've made together, for example, the decision to go to Belgium in 1987, this, I believe, is healthy. At least I can't turn round 5 years later and say, it's all your fault, I never wanted to come anyway. But I did, in fact, go through several months of a debilitating depression after our move to Belgium and the birth of our fourth child. I suffered from anxiety attacks every morning, such that for weeks I just had to go back to bed mid-morning because I had no energy left. During the months and the couple of years that followed, I felt unable to take any big decisions. So I had to trust Stephen's judgment and submit and follow. There was a financial decision we made following advice. It turned out to be the wrong advice and the wrong decision. We lost some money over it. We had to reverse that decision. Now, I think that if I had been feeling my normal self, I probably would not, I would probably have cautioned Stephen about this financial investment, and we would have talked it over together, and we might not have made this mistake. But at the time, I was out of the picture. I wasn't coping. I needed Stephen to take that decision, which wouldn't wait. So, yes, we learn from our mistakes. Leaving our ministry in a country church was something else that we had a different approach on. I was ready to leave about 5 or 6 years before Stephen was ready to leave. But Stephen felt that God still had work for us to do there. And so I submitted. We talked about it. I felt understood. It was, after all, primarily Stephen's job and not mine. Stephen had heard my point of view. He valued it. He did what he could to make my burden lighter. And I can see now, God bless that decision. So, yes, I am happy to be a submissive wife, married to Stephen, who loves me. My final word is, love covers a multitude of sins.
Thank you very much.
We need to put the microphone on.
Thank you very much. If I could just pick up then on what leadership is, continuing on from that and perhaps in light of that. For me, leadership is taking responsibility. Leadership is taking responsibility, and I think Ruth has evoked that certainly in what she has said. Because authority, as you know very well, authority and responsibility go together. For example, give a man a responsibility without authority, and it is for him an uninspiring, sterile task. He is hampered at every wretched point. He has the responsibility, but not the authority. But give a man authority without responsibility, and he becomes, well, a tyrant, a fool, or just bone idle. So a man has authority as head of the family. He has also the responsibility. Easy to say, very important. What is being responsible? And I think it's something like this. It's carrying the load. It's being accountable for the outcome. Is that what responsibility is? It's being accountable for the outcome. So, for example, as husband, as head of the household, am I carrying the load? Stephen, am I carrying the load, or am I being carried? Think of domains like child discipline, finances, administration, domestic issues, Christian issues, direction issues, church issues. Am I carrying the load, or am I being carried? Am I leading or following? Am I being diligent or lazy? Am I being active or passive, proactive or fatalistic? Fatalism comes fairly easy to Stephen. I think it may be a background issue. Well, it's like that. Am I being proactive or fatalistic? Am I being an adult or am I being a child? It's quite easy to act the child, and it's fairly easy for a man to act the child. Am I being an adult or a child? For I am, or I will be one day, accountable to God for the marriage. God will ask me one day something like, what about your wife? What did you do with what I entrusted to you? For a wife is a sacred, amazing trust. Thank you, William and Richard, for your comments on that. Indeed, a sacred and amazing trust. No, I'm not talking about worshipping your wife here. That's another problem. But there is something of honor and awe here, isn't there? Here I am, accorded the help of a godly, beautiful, gifted woman. I think we need to think that carefully. What a sacred trust. Am I taking responsibility for her properly? Or am I lazy? Leadership means being exclusively committed to one woman. We've already touched on this. No rivals, no flirting, no sly slide into adultery, no virtual rivals, no pornography, ever. Adultery breaks marriage. That's dead obvious. Virtual adultery can poison the heart of marriage, which is trust and the uniqueness of the bond. Say no. Men, say no to all those things. May God help us. Leadership means leading. I think we've touched upon this. I think William touched on this earlier most helpfully. The husband leads, because if he doesn't lead, someone else will lead. And it could well be the wife. When a husband and wife respectively leave, cleave, and become one flesh, they separate from their birth families to form a brand new family. So listen carefully, it's not his family extended by this woman. It's not her family extended by this man, where his parents still rule or her parents still rule. No, it's a new family where he leads. Parents and parents-in-law don't lead. And I think William has said this, if they do interfere, then we must have the grace and, dare I say, the guts to say lovingly, go away. So the husband leads. His parents or parents-in-law don't lead. She submits to him, the husband, not to parents-in-law or parents, but to him. And make no mistake, leadership infiltration is what I call it, can be very subtle. And especially if there are marital difficulties or bossy in-laws. Men lead. In the first years of our marriage, my mother, she's now dead, said to Ruth in my hearing, I am no longer the most important woman in Stephen's life. I love my mother. At the time, I took it sentimentally, I confess. It was really touching. But my mother had put her finger on a crucial issue. Ruth now had preeminence. That's right. My mother would no longer lead me as a parent. I would lead Ruth as a husband. Interesting, isn't it, in Ephesians 5, that husbands are enjoined to love their wives, notably, and wives to respect their husbands. Well, yes, it is easier, and with this I finish, it is easier to lead my wife and love her if she is, how can I say, lovable, if I can split the word. If she is lovable, it's a jolly sight easier. It is easier to submit to a husband if he is respectable or worthy of respect. You follow? So my responsibility is to be loving my wife so as it makes it easier for her, leading my wife and loving my wife, excuse me, to make it easier for her to respect me. Is that right? Well, we must stop talking. You have in front of you a question sheet, I think, with a few questions. Let me say, don't spend all your time concentrating on your spouse's errors. Begin with the plank in your own eye. Thank you.